And I will always think of you there, in that exact moment. Always and forever. Waiting for the day that I will come to see you die. You'll only have one chance, Clara, the ancient clockmaker warns. Make it count. Wind-brown skin hangs in folds on his cheeks and under his eyes. Eyes that are dimmed by age, but the exact color that hers had been. The blue of the Irish sky just after a rainstorm. It's a likeness I didn't have then, but do now. This clock precedes time itself, he continues, pointing at the massive grandfather clock that seems to consume the space in the hallway. Don't tamper with anything. I'm still not entirely sure that I believe in magical clocks that can send you back in time. If such things exist, why do we suffer our past mistakes? Why do we wear scars when we can simply go back and avoid the wounds in the first place? But I couldn't resist. Could you? And have taken the journey from Montreal across the surfs and fogs of the Celtic Sea to the wild fields of Kentmore, my mother's birthplace. All to meet this man who has promised me something that I will gladly trade for life itself. A chance to see my daughter again. It shames me to know that at this one thing, motherhood, I have failed. He, my great-grandfather, like many patriarchs of the old country, is the keeper of family heirlooms. 3 weeks ago, he contacted me with the story of this clock. A clock, he'd claimed, that can send me back in time. A clock which is to be my inheritance. Crazed and perhaps senile, I'd first thought the old man, but something pulled me to his cliffs. If I could have a chance, however slim, to make it all right again, it's a trip I was willing to take. I'll be careful, I assure him now, not expecting anything more from the old wooden ticker than the striking of the hour. But the old man seems sure and speaks with a certainty free of fancy. Mind yourself, Clara, he warns again in his lyrical lilt. Do not attempt to alter anything outside of your own moment. Reliving that moment is a gift, and if I tamper with anything, I interrupt, reciting the line that he has lectured me with for days, I will be trapped there, always reliving the exact same moment forever. The idea of losing her over and over and over again for eternity gives me chills. It is something that I can endure only twice. The clock stands over 10 feet tall in a scarred mahogany case. Stepping into the door below the moon dial, I am momentarily overcome by a foreign feeling of claustrophobia, followed by the dawning realization of how miraculous it is if it does what its owner claims it can do. While most clocks keep track of time, Mr. Fadden had told me when we first met, this clock keeps time itself, allowing us to travel back to a moment in our past. We can only relive that particular moment. It was then that I got the idea. It had been exactly 2 years since her death. 2 years of agony. Of brief moments each morning, when sleep still cloaks memories, and my Isla is alive and well. Of ghostly whispers and faint laughter and cries of, Mommy? Mommy? You'll be allowed to make amends, but nothing more, he offered when I had approached him with the idea. Time travel is a gift bestowed upon our blood. It is not child's play. Mind yourself. I know, I had replied. I just want another chance to do it right. You can't bring her back, Clara. Remember this. Ready? The old man calls from outside the wooden door. Ready, I return, not quite sure what I'm ready for. The gentle tick, tick, tick does nothing to soothe my nerves. Instead, they warn me of how little time I have when I finally get there. If, I mentally correct myself, if I get there. I am, after all, standing in a wooden box expecting a miracle. This is it, luck to you. I hear a small, grating sound. Fadden has turned the hands on the dial, just like he'd demonstrated. Suddenly the weights that hang over the door begin to chime and is followed by a jolt. I'm pulled back against the clock, but I do not hit what is supposed to be the wooden frame. I am falling backwards, not completely unbalanced. The glass door fades from sight. Mr. Fadden disappears, and darkness surrounds me. Tick, tick, tick sounds in the darkness, and I am free-falling into the abyss to a moment that I have lived, but missed 2 years before. The small hospital room is exactly the same. Celadon walls, the smell of Lysol and medicine, the electronic beeping of machines. She lies fast asleep, her breath steady but heavy. Death is close, lingering but not yet claiming her. Even then, death had waited, giving me a chance to do right by her. Tonight, this favor will not be wasted. Tick, tick, tick. Walking over to the bed, I put my hand on her sweaty forehead. Her skin is like onion, almost see-through. Purple circles outline lidless eyes. My baby, I cry, caressing the head where long brown hair once grew. My poor baby. Mommy, she calls but does not wake. The sudden stir has me pulling my hand back. Does it hurt when I touch her? I have no idea. How can a mother not know when her child hurts? Mommy, she moans again in sleep, and I realize I missed so much on that last night. Back then, I was in a drunken sleep and did not hear when she called for me. Now I hear, and my heart shatters twice, once for my negligence and once for now. And I know that my heart will forever break. Tick, tick, tick. Honey, I whisper, a name I only began using after she was long gone. I look at her with tears blurring my vision, not sure if waking her is best, but I do not want her to die alone again. This time, I will be awake. Her eyes flutter open and blue gems stare back at me in wonder. You're up, she mutters with disbelief. Yes, I say, leaning close. How do you feel? She looks at me as if I am a stranger and replies, tired. Then sleep, I whisper, kissing her forehead. Tick, tick, tick. But she wants to tell me something. I saw Daddy, she whispers, as if remembering a long-lost dream. Daddy says that he'll be waiting for me. She says it with a brave smile. Tears sting my eyes, but I don't allow them to fall. Don't go to Daddy, I want to tell her. But Mr. Fadden's warning stops me. Do not alter anything. His voice invades my thoughts. You can't bring her back. Go, baby, I whisper into her ear as I lean in for a kiss. Go see Daddy. But what about you? She asks as she begins to fade. Her eyes are barely open now and her voice is frail. The note of the ECG is slowing, and from the corner of my eyes I see that the line on the machine is nearly flat. A large lump lodges itself in my throat. Soon I will not be able to speak, but it is words that I need to give her, ointments that will soothe a bruised soul, a soul that was bruised by a mother. Don't worry about me, I whisper. Mommy'll be okay. I love you so much. I love you too, she replies. They were her last words. Tell Daddy I love him and I miss him, I say, hoping that enough of her spirit is still there to hear me. "You've healed me." And then she is gone. This time, the stench of alcohol does not linger in the room. There's no doctor to shake me awake to the cold corpse of my 8-year-old daughter. I am not so intoxicated that I do not recognize her cancer-eaten body. There are no profanities shouted in her presence, and security is not hailed to escort an unfit and drunken mother to the front doors of the children's hospital. When my moment is over, I step away from her bed and collapse in agony. Once again, the room begins to fade, and an invisible string in my back is yanked. Moments later, I am free-falling back towards my own reality as she fades into the distance. "How was..." Mr. Fadden begins to ask, but stops. Crouched on the floor inside the old grandfather clock, I live, for the first time, through the pain of a mother losing her child.